Dropping the throw is Watson. Still in the pocket. Still looking, and now he's going to get hit. Clarency McCray is in there, and he's going to get a sack. The special team specialist in there is a outside linebacker pass rusher. The ninth sack for the Jaguars today.
And that was all coverage.
Isn't that a record?
Yeah, all-time record for the Jaguars.
We got the best secondary in the league, easily. When we went out there, we showed it. I'm going to go out and say we got the best defense in the league.
Blake Bortles takes a knee, and that's going to do it. And the Jaguars are going to run to a very warm, toasty locker room as victors again. They go to 7-3 on the season, a well-earned 7-3. Four wins in a row for Jacksonville's first-place Jaguars. Shotgun for Brissett. He dropped the throw against a four-man rush. Now he's going to get hit. He scrambles out of there. Got away from another defender, but he cannot get away from Calais Campbell, who finishes him off. Saxonville is alive here. They get him back at the 19-yard line.
Just a note here. The Los Angeles Rams have won. The Jaguars are now the AFC South division champions.
What's disappointing is, you come out and you play a game like this, and at the end of the day, you're not able to enjoy it, the way you want to. So, we're going to keep our focus, on correcting the mistakes that we've made, going out. We got to get on the road again, got to fly back, get on the road again, go to Nashville, play a division opponent, and win a game. And then we'll focus on, what comes after that, after that game.
Very weird feeling. I think anytime you lose, especially playing the way we've been playing, it's tough. But it's also kind of in the back of your head, that we won the division, first time in Jacksonville Jaguars franchise history. So that's pretty cool, but, I don't think anybody's happy or pleased with what went on today. We wanted to win the division by winning today. We weren't able to do that, so that's tough. But, we got to get some things fixed and get some things right and go up to Nashville next week.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome in as you listen to some of the highlights from the various points in the season. A reminder that if the worst problem you have is losing on the day you clinched the division title after a 3-13 season, that's a pretty good problem to have for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It wasn't pretty on Sunday. There's no question about it. There's no sugarcoating how the team played in all three phases. But the end result is, you're going to the postseason. In less than 2 weeks, you've got a home game coming here to Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman. Tony, a good Christmas for you, I take it?
Yeah, fantastic. Spent some time with
the
family.
Got the little niece.
The niece,
which
was
fun.
Was great. She picked out a Christmas present for me, buying everyone in the family candy, picked lemon heads for me, which was the perfect choice. It is my favorite candy on the planet. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I even bought, I bought Katie, my sister-in-law, I bought her the Harry Potter jelly beans, of all the many flavors, and some of them are terrible. And she's a big Harry Potter fan. So she opens them up, and of course my niece is like, ooh, candy. And she's like, okay, let's play this game. So she's handing my niece candy, and she's like, what do you think that was? And she's like, is that sausage? And it was. She nailed it. It was a
really?
Sausage jelly bean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because everybody's favorite is sausage jelly bean.
Sausage? There's really such a thing?
Apparently
it's a,
so.
It's a Harry Potter thing, okay. Yeah. Where it's all these different flavors, you never know what you're going to get. Some of them are really gross.
Logs, never did you think that that stuff you dragging out of the woods could be made into jelly beans.
Hey, so I'm
whatever
all for
happens
it.
To be,
I'm
man.
All for it, man.
Good Christmas for you?
It was fantastic. Yeah, a little tired, but it was fantastic.
When did you guys get back? What time did you land?
You got home 3:30, a little bit after maybe. By the time you kind of unwind and finally fall asleep, it's 4:30 and... Yeah, and the kids are up at 8 o'clock, ready to go.
They are up and ready to go. There's no question about that. We made a bargain with Colin. We got to sleep till 8:30 on Christmas Day, which was
good for you.
Quite nice. Absolutely quite nice. We had a great one as well. All right, so for Jaguar fans, kind of bittersweet. You win the division title. That's fantastic, and I think it is an accomplishment that shouldn't just be swept under the rug in the the upset over how they lost the game. However, you do have to look at how they lost the game here, Logs. And to me, it was, a number of areas. It's a shame to see Blake Bortles having the season he had and on the hot streak he had the three interceptions, the first pick six of the season. But more shocking to me was how this defense really never seemed to stop the 49ers. They got the end zone interception, but even that came on the tail end of a long drive. But I thought the way they fought back was very telling for their character in the first half, and I expected a completely different second half than we got.
Yeah, it was some really good things in that game, and then some things that make you go, wow, are they really ready to make a push in the playoffs? You know, but let me say this out of the gate. I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of. That's a good football team. A team that really has been, you know, down around the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, in the National Football League and hadn't been playing very well. Then all of a sudden they won, you know, four out of their last five going into that game. They won three in a row. They've got a quarterback who had been playing extremely well. And it was an organization, and you can kind of tell, an organization that had hope. And I was concerned about the game from a couple different standpoints. One is that when you look at the injury report going into a game that late in the season with a team that's 4-10, and there's two guys that are even in question on the injury report for that team, it shows you that, look, guys aren't tanking it. Guys aren't cashing it in and looking forward to what they're going to be doing in, you know, after the first of the year. I mean, this is a team that was excited to play, was excited to win because they haven't won. And Jimmy Garoppolo has given that franchise, that fan base, a great amount of hope, and you could just see that when they took the field, they were looking to win and looking to have fun. And I think that's very different. Like you watch Pittsburgh, you know, yesterday, the Philadelphia Eagles against the Raiders. I mean, I think it's two totally different things. So 49ers, good football team. Give Kyle Shanahan a lot of credit. You know, he knew that defense very well. And I'm sure that, you know, but that works both ways. I mean, you know, the Jaguars should have known the 49ers defense with Robert Saleh, former Jaguars linebackers coach, very well. And a flip-flop, you know, Robert Saleh was here. He knows Todd Walsh's system very well. But a credit to Kyle Shanahan because he dialed up some plays that kept the defense off balance, I think, the entire game.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into semantics. I personally think it's not a good football team, but they happen to have a good quarterback, and he's improved their fortunes. I mean, even if you look at the four out of five games that they won, the level of competition that they played was pretty bad. There were some close games in there. Now, the Tennessee game was a good one. There's no question about it because Tennessee's fighting for their playoff lives, and this is a quality win for them. Whatever. I don't want to debate the quality of the 49ers as much as I want to debate the quality of the Jaguars' performance in this football game. So the running game, once again, Leonard Fournette getting bottled up. What is this a product of mostly? Is it line play? Is it Fournette maybe not as fresh as he's been? Is it teams that are still saying, you know what, no matter what Blake's doing, we're going to make sure that 27 doesn't beat us?
Well, I will say that, first of all, The 49ers, and I know you're not sold on the 49ers, but if you looked at them over the last six games statistically, their numbers as a defense were top five. For yards allowed, they hadn't allowed a 100-yard rusher all season long. They had 47 plays for minus yardage in the running game, which is like second in the National Football League. Their front seven is a slew of high draft picks, and a couple of them, DeForest Buckner and Reuben Foster. Excellent play.
They have talent. I'm not arguing. I do think those numbers, though, are skewed. When you play the Giants, who have no running game, when you play Houston, who has been absolutely miserable. Again, they're an improving football team.
Yeah, they're an improving football team. And you know, and look, as far as the Jaguars, I mean, if you just evaluate just them, ignore the opponent, you know, the offensive line didn't block as well as they have in the past. I think the tempo and the way that the game kind of went kind of took away from some of the focus on the running game to where you can kind of pound it, and then break some late in the game. Because, you know, if you go back to the Jaguars' victory against the Texans at home, the running game really wasn't that good until the end. The numbers with Corey Grant obviously changed the outcome of that, or not the outcome, but changed the end result as far as the numbers go in the running game. So it's not like they were going in that game, you know, on a roll running the football. The disappointing thing to me was that in the Seattle game, the last time that we saw Leonard Fournette, he appeared to have a little bit of a burst.
Yeah.
And I didn't see a little bit of a burst in this game. And I know that he missed the previous game. He was on the injury report with a quad. Did that impact him? I don't know. But it didn't look great. And if you're going to be the team that's competitive, that people are scared of in the playoffs, you've got to have the running game and Leonard Fournette bringing fear to an opponent. so that teams respect your running game to the point where it makes it easier for you to have a passing game. And the 49ers, give them credit. They did a very good job against it. But, you know, I thought the story of the game to me was right out of the gate, you know, the Jaguars allow an opening possession touchdown by an opponent, which hadn't been done, and that was the first time in 22 games.
Right.
And then they followed that up with another drive for a field goal. So, bam, 10-0, you're down. And now you've got, you know, the television cameras captured it on the sideline, a little bit of a ruckus kind of on the Jaguars' defense. And, you know, how do you look at that? Well, you look at it two different ways. One, that's a sign that there's a problem, number one. Or number two, you look at it as it's a highly competitive group, that's not their standard, they're not happy about it, and that they'll get it worked out. But it's cause for concern, right? Because, I mean,
you
just haven't seen it.
Right. Here's what Doug Marrone said about that after the game, and we'll continue, obviously, this discussion after the first time out and let folks weigh in on this. But here was Doug Marrone on teammates arguing on the sideline, particularly the Malik Jackson and Aaron Colvin dust-up.
I've always been okay with the sideline stuff. It's a very emotional game. The sideline situations, those things have happened throughout my career all the time. It's, believe me, it stays right where it is. I mean, that's the one thing. But where I do have an issue, Mike, is our composure on the field or a coach on the sideline when the players are on the field. You know what I'm saying? Which that didn't happen, but our composure on the field. That's where, you know, the sideline stuff, you're not going to get penalized for. You know, emotion is going to go on, and that happens, and that's part of the game. Controlling our emotions when we're on the field, that affects the team. And that's what we've got to do a better job of.
Yeah, and when you combine the two of them, that makes you go, you know, that's not good, you know, because, and, you know, and during, and when I say the two of them, we're talking about the personal foul, the taunting, et cetera, that happened in the course of the game. Now, I did say, and I still believe that I thought the refs had an extremely quick trigger on some of those penalties. You know, and even going back and watching the Malik Jackson one that wasn't captured on film. The Miles Jack one on the sideline was very clear on film. He didn't stand over. He walked by, and he was looking down at the guy.
The Malik one was captured.
I didn't see it on film is what I'm
okay.
saying.
Okay.
I saw it on TV.
Gotcha.
I saw it on TV. So, I mean, this is kind of what was going through my mind watching on the film on the airplane ride back. And at first of all, the Miles Jack one, I get it. But at the same token, it's football. I mean, that what Miles Jack did – has been done hundreds of times in the league. If he stood over him and stayed over the top of him and looked down at him and said something to him, flag all the time. But he was walking by looking down. I didn't really understand why that flag was thrown. But at the same token, you can't give the officials any reason to throw a flag. So from that standpoint, you still got to go ahead and talk to your player. Look, that's your fault. Because you look down at the players you're walking by, the NFL and the officials in that instance should not have thrown the flag. The Malik Jackson one, they called it a headbutt. When I saw it on the replay, I thought it was two players jawing at each other, going face to face, and not so much a vicious head throwing down headbutt.
Didn't think it was vicious, but I thought it was clearly Malik
instigated. You still can't give the officials
especially
the
when
opportunity.
He's literally 2 feet away, staring right
well,
at
and,
you.
And at the moment of the game,
right?
I mean this is
trying
this
is
to get
the game.
The ball back.
This is it
this
right
is
here.
Game.
You've got all the momentum in the world.
So from that standpoint, you don't like it. I still thought it was a really quick flag. You know, look, I mean, it's an emotional game. And you know, and I'll say this again, and I said it during the broadcast. Jeff Triplett, you know, and his crew have a bad reputation, and I thought that the worst one of all was the call where they blew it dead because of what was it?
Forward progress. Right. That was terrible.
Call.
Yeah, I
you
agree.
Know, so
with
look,
you. That
I'm not pinning
call.
The game on the officials. I'm just saying is that there were some things that happened from an officiating standpoint that I thought that were just. Not up to par.
By the way, I thought his forward progress was stopped, but the refs never blow the whistle that quickly just because the guy's getting yanked back.
Forward progress is stopped all the time, but I mean,
my point. I mean, I think technically you could argue, well, he did was being pulled back in his progress forward, but usually let that play out. The guys break tackles. Yes. There are all kinds of things that happen. Yeah, so I agree with you on that call. It was, you know, could have been a major turning point in the game for the Jags. All right, today.
Give credit to Garoppolo now. He played well.
No, he did. We'll talk about it all the way for the next 2 hours. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Brought to you by First Coast Roofing. A question of the day is not so much a question, just a request for you to send your Jaguar-related inquiries for Jeff Logman, and he will deal with those, whether you send them in via Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Logs56LGS56, or on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. You can call us at 641-1010, or check in at on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, at the very same number. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Logman here with you. Happy holidays. Jags are division champs. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is what I told the team afterwards. You know, Sam Ryan, I said, hey, listen, you know, we've earned that. You know, obviously, you know, we won 10 football games and we've earned it, but we really can't celebrate it. Because, and that's really the part of it. So, you know, we know that there's something for us this postseason. We know there's a sense of accomplishment, but that's something that we'll look back on. Right now, our focus is, you know, correcting that, doing a better job, you know what I'm saying, and getting ourselves ready to play, you know, the final game of the season.
That's Doug Marrone in response to a question from Ryan O'Halloran, which it's Christmas every day in the O'Halloran house when Ryan gets recognized by name in the response. So I know he is fist pumping somewhere listening to Jaguars Today. You know you are, Ryan. We'll see you Thursday, by the way. All right, Log's got a lot of questions coming in, and there are going to be a lot of questions about how they should approach this next game. And tomorrow we're going to really invite folks, no matter what Doug Marrone does, we're going to invite folks to really weigh in on what they would do is how they would approach it. Will you rest certain guys? Do you play maybe a half with certain starters? Are you only resting guys that have nagging injuries? How, based on the circumstances, which we all know what they are, the Jags can improve or fall back from the 3 seed. How would you approach this game against Tennessee this week?
You play it to win like your life depends, like your playoff life depends on it. And I'm a believer in that because, look, you're not a team that's got great playoff experience. You need all the momentum. You need to be clicking on all cylinders. You need to have as much confidence as you possibly can going into the playoffs. And so, my opinion, you play this game like you need to win it. And here's the other reason why. You know, it's a division opponent, you know. You play your division opponents to beat them every time, because if you don't beat them, the likelihood of you facing them again the following week and having them have an opportunity to beat you 3 times in a season, flashback 1999, is there.
Do you think, though, that aspect of it factors in as well? Like, does Doug Marrone care about history of the Tennessee Titans and the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Doug Marrone doesn't care. Tom Coughlin doesn't care. And Dave Caldwell. All they care about is advancing in the playoffs.
Correct.
Okay, that's number one. But, you know, if you go back and you look at the history of Tom Coughlin, because he's the boss, okay, he's the boss of football, he has never played a game that didn't have meaning without playing to win. Go back and look at the Patriots game, the last game of the season, which they played them.
Granted, they did. You're right. And I think he felt a certain obligation to history to do that. And also the fact that, you know, there was the potential that they could meet up again, which they did. And I think he wanted his team to not be overwhelmed, to say, hey, look, we can go toe-to-toe with this mm-hmm. team. I did think that was a little bit of a different circumstance. But point granted, you're right, he has not done that.
I think it's a belief with him. You know, I don't think it. You look at
so any, you're okay. Like if Blake goes out there and blows out his knee, that's
just you're playing to win
the way it is.
You are playing to win.
To win what though?
To win a game.
Okay.
To win a game, to get to 11 wins, to go into the playoffs with momentum and confidence.
Okay. I'm not. You're not the only one that's going to be on that side. To me, now how does that extend? I mean, if this were the playoffs this week, I suspect Cam Robinson would play. He's got an abdominal strain. Right? He'd do everything he could to play, right? Do you maybe not push certain guys to that extent? If you've got Jalen Ramsey's had some nagging injuries, he's probably healthy enough to play.
Yeah, I think there are decisions that like that. Okay, you know, do we take a guy like we're using Cam Robinson as an example.
Sure.
You know, and I don't think they do this anymore, but back in the day, okay, do we shoot him up? Okay, shoot that spot up, and he plays because there is no tomorrow. If the importance of this game was you had to win, or if it was a playoff game, you do that, okay, without having the implication of this game, a guy like that doesn't play because you know that in 2 weeks he's going
to
be better.
So you play to win within reason, not necessarily. If this were week six, maybe you might put that guy out there because you don't know which game's going to be the most important. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, in week six, you wouldn't even consider putting him out there, I think. You know, and I'm just guessing here, okay, based on severity of the injury because we don't know the severity of the injury.
Right.
But, you know, in week six, you know, regular season, if it's iffy, you know, whether or not he can make it or not, you don't even consider playing him because, you look, it's a long haul. You got a lot of games left. In this last game, if this were a playoff game and there is no tomorrow, look, let's just go ahead and find a way to get it ready, and then we live with the consequences and see if we can, you know, get them back again the following week. But, you know, with this being a game that, you know, you're not going to advance your playoff seeding with a guy like that medically, I think you sit there and you go, okay, look, you know, 2 weeks we got him at a much higher level, greater chance of having success, so let's not play him this week. But, you know, when it comes to other guys, you're not resting guys that can play, okay, that might have a little nick. I mean, you're rolling.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the next question was going to be. It's guys like Jalen Ramsey, who we know is dealing with two or three different things right now. Little things, it's just nagging things.
He plays.
Right, but how do you handle, you know, all those guys on this team right now, especially on offense where they're so depleted in the wide receiver group anyway?
They all play. You know, I think, you know, the only one, I mean, because the only one's come to mind, you know, a guy that didn't finish the game that clearly, you know, wasn't good. Like, for that, that's an easy decision. He doesn't play. But everybody else that's got nicks or something like that, let's go.
So you play, regardless, you play Blake Bortles. Like, if the offense goes out there and goes three touchdown drives in the first half, you still playing him 60 minutes?
If the game's under control, you know, to where, what I mean, saying, you know, the game's out of reach, then you take him out. But,
okay,
know,
but if it's not out
of
reach.
21 nothing after three drives in the first quarter, you're not taking him out.
If it's 21-14, you're leaving him in there.
Yes.
Okay.
What do you think is going on right now with Fournette? And I know I've heard you comment on it during the broadcast. It feels like for the last month or so, we haven't seen him running with the same kind of power that we saw early on in the season. Do you think it's an injury thing? Do you think there may be something with some kind of rhythm with the offensive line at this point, too?
No, I think the offensive line wasn't as good yesterday, but I think overall, I think, you know, because look, when you went back, if you look at the first six games of the season, now, Leonard Fournette didn't have these big gaping holes that he was hitting at full speed and all of a sudden you were holding your breath right then and there going, oh, my God, he might go 50. You know, he was pounding it out, earning 3 and 4 yards a pop and powering through some guys to get 3 yards. And when you watch him on film, the steps are a little bit shorter. The leg drive isn't continuing upon contact. And to me, that indicates that just something is not quite right. And I'm not faulting him for that because, look, physically, you either can or you can't. You know, so the foot, ankle, quad, whatever he's got going on is not allowing him to be the type of running back that we saw early in the season that is waving defenders on, okay, going, bring it, let's go.
So is this a guy then you want to see maybe not play in week 17?
No, won't see him play because he's not going to get any better by getting an extra week, I don't think. I think what he's got is what he's got, you know, and that's going to be something that's going to be, you know, it's going to take more than a week to get ready to rock and roll at full speed.
Mm. We'll see. But I think I would go the other way on that because, you know, not only it may not be that you're going to get back to 100%, but you're not going to re-aggregate, you know, you're not going to make it worse.
Right.
You know, so that would be.
And it's a good look. What you bring up, I'm not saying that I'm right or you're right.
And I understand.
I think you can make an argument either way. You know,
for me, it's like, as somebody brought up in the post game, I think it's kind of like almost the bye week that you were playing for. Like, it stinks that you're coming in on a down note. I think if they beat San Francisco, I don't think there's any question that they're resting guys this week. Because then it's, to me, at least to me it is, because then it's not a question about momentum and how you're playing. It's a question about what can we do to be the most prepared for week 18, which is now the most important week of your season.
And here's the thing, it's, you know, I'm assuming that they're going to be, you know, guns a-blazing, let's go.
Right.
Okay, because that's just what I know of Tom Coughlin.
Oh, I think you're right about that.
But the curious thing to me is, will they do that? You know, because, you know, some of the points you bring up, you know, you make some great points. But in my opinion, and it's only an opinion, gaining momentum and playing your best going into the playoffs gives you the best opportunity to have success in the playoffs. But at the same token, you know, resting guys might make sense.
I look back to 2007. They whomped some butt in week 16. They crushed, was it the Raiders? I think they played, absolutely beat them down. So when they went to Houston,
wasn't at the Warren Sapp game where they had personal foul
penalties?
It may have been.
Yeah. Right. And then they went to Houston for week 17 and just sat all kinds of guys, right? And they actually were competitive. I think it was 42-28 was the final. Relatively competitive considering how many guys they benched in that game. But it was a different circumstance because they were coming off a dominating performance. Again, I think if they beat San Fran or if they, you know,
if they beat San
much
Fran,
better,
it's still out in front of them as far as the bye.
This is true. Right. I'm just, in fact, taking the bye.
I think
week
we're all assuming New
right
England and Pittsburgh are going to win next
week. No, but
week,
you're right. That's a good point, Tony, about that. Here's one, a shot across the bow of number 56.
Okay.
Is Jeff still yucking it up about Zane Beatles, because on Thursday he made sure made it seem like whoever lined up against him would have a field day.
Well, and they would have, but the problem was is that the Jaguars never got the offense, the 49er offense, or Zane Beatles in an obvious drop back situation. You know, my hope was is that it's third and six plus throughout the game, and Jimmy Garoppolo is drop back passing. It's not a bunch of third and ones, twos, and threes. And Zane Beatles has to be, a pro-style right tackle and block somebody in space. But they didn't get to that point. And that was the problem in the game, is that you just didn't have any type of obvious, manageable third down situations as a defense because the 49ers kept you off balance. I mean, I think they were late in the game. I think they had a third and 11. And I was like, is this not the best third down opportunity that they've had in the game? Because they were all third, one, twos, and threes.
Right.
So, how can you make a guard, play tackle, and play to your strength, his weakness, when you can't even get to that down and distance? So, look, Zane, I thought Zane, as far as the play action stuff, he did good. When he had to drop back, Clayus was killing him. He couldn't handle him at all. And if you got him into more situations like that, it would have been ugly, but you didn't get him in that situation.
All right, we got to take a timeout here. If you want to get on board, 641-1010. We'll continue to pick through the questions on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, of course, your tweets and Facebook postings as well. Questions for Jeff Loggeman on a Check the Tape Tuesday. Jags division champs, but coming off a 44-33 defeat at the hands of the San Francisco 49ers. With that, Tony and Jeff Loggeman, I'm Mike Dempsey on Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It would be nice to eliminate those penalties, first and foremost. But when they do happen, football is an emotional game. Football is a, violent game like that. It happens. So when that does happen, we just have to, we got to stick with the guys. And we just got to make stops, which is unfortunately not what we were able to do.
That's Jalen Ramsey after the game. A little introspective, said the team definitely needs to eliminate some of those penalties, but understands that some of that just derives from the fact that it's an emotional game. They're an emotional team, and they're a team that wears it on their shoulder. We talked about you want to walk it right up to that line, right, the edge that they play with, and try to keep it on the proper side of the line.
They wavered a couple times on the opposite side of
that. Toppled over once or twice.
Yeah, the penalty on Yannick was totally unnecessary. It was a play in which, happens, guys kind of get, lipping with each other and get pushing with each other, and then Yannick, who was kind of away from the action, inserts himself in the action, and it was right in front of the official. There was absolutely no reason for that.
Right, and he went in the process, he didn't do it intentionally, but in the process of trying to get to the scrum, he bumped the official. That's immediately when the flag comes out. You got to be smarter than that.
Wasn't very smart.
You can't, because in the postseason, man, you don't know when the play is going to happen. That's going to be the difference in the football game. It could be a third down, that you're getting the other team off the field and you extend a drive and they end up getting a field goal. It could be anything, and there's no room for anything self-inflicted to happen in the postseason. Here are some questions on the text line driven by Duval Ford for you, Jeff Lagerman. By the way, you can submit them on the text line at 641-1010. The phone line, same number. And, of course, Twitter and Facebook. Were the interceptions for Blake a result of having all rookie receivers? Let's break them down a little bit here. The first one with Keelan Cole. Blake said afterwards it's a route where Keelan Cole's supposed to sit down and that he kind of threw him into a defender, and he said he put it on himself, and good quarterbacks will do that. It is a rookie wide receiver. Was Blake trying to protect his guy?
I think he was. And, you know, it's a crossing route, and the 49ers are in like a zone that where you've got a man free that he's running into. It was man, but you always have a couple guys that are free. Like cover one, you've got a deep middle free safety, and he can kind of play wherever he wants to. It appeared to be a zone concept with a guy underneath that was free. And he's waiting, basically, for Keelan Cole to come across. And Keelan Cole is going to get hit in the mouth, you know, if he keeps on running. But if you're a wide receiver, you got to keep going. And Blake throws it like he's going to keep going. And so if he was supposed to sit it down, he certainly picked a bad time to sit it down. And looking at what the reaction was on the sideline, and kind of how animated that Keenan McCardell was, my guess is that it was Keelan Cole who made the mistake there. But as a quarterback, you know, you're the one talking to the media. You're going to put it on you.
Was that the moment that Keelan and Keenan and
I'm not
Alan
sure.
Hurts? I'm not sure either.
That was
at the
exactly
moment now.
It
that
or,
right
or not? But
what did you make of that little exchange? Just the guy's emotions run high. I mean, it was like Keenan to me, and I'm trying to read body language here. Was like, don't you walk away from me, young man? You know, like yeah, like I mean, it's like to me, it was like a kid in grade school getting yanked by the collar. You know, get right back here, because I mean, that's what he did. He grabbed him by the back of the jersey and is like, no, you're not walking away from me. And Alan Hurns had to get two hands up in his chest like, buddy, simmer down right here. You know, I get it's an emotional game. Doug Marrone says, doesn't that really have a problem with the sideline outburst? But
yeah, I mean, that happens. Look, coaches, players always have discussions. I'll leave it at that on the sideline, you know, and sometimes it's good. You know, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you always want to say, well, the coach is always right. Well, sometimes – you know, he might be partially right, you know, so.
That's the most diplomatic way of putting something.
Sometimes you got to have, you know, as a player, you've got to have a discussion, and sometimes as a coach, you got to have a discussion about it.
All right, let's go to the next interception. It was a terrific catch, but I just thought it was a soft toss lob by Blake. I did not like the throw at all. It was a dangerous pass. You know the one I'm talking about?
That was
about?
One that K1 Williams caught one-handed.
Caught one. Yeah. It was a great catch,
zone,
but it was
coverage,
still a way
again.
Too dangerous pass.
Yeah, I shouldn't have thrown it.
Okay.
Yeah, I shouldn't have thrown it.
Mercedes looked like he was coming wide open over the middle on the
play. Yeah, and I don't remember if he was or not. I was more focused in on, you know, why he made that throw. Could he have found a different window? I just thought that it was just too risky of a throw. But you have a quarterback who, over the last couple weeks, has gained a lot of confidence, you know, and he probably felt that he could make that throw.
And he had a couple bucket throws in this game.
He really did. He really did. You know, that one deep ball that he made to Keelan Cole up the sideline.
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was beautiful.
I heard you say that you thought it might be the best ball you've ever seen him throw.
I thought it was one of the best, if not the best throw that he's ever made, especially, you know, on a deep ball. So, you know, I'm okay with that one, you know, because he tried. The one that was nearly intercepted, which fortunately was dropped by the rookie safety, was just a bad throw, a really bad throw. And then the interception by Keller Witherspoon at the end of the game was solely on Blake.
Okay. So, basically, one completely on him. The other one is probably on him, but you can live with the decision.
It happens.
And the other one is maybe 75-25, mostly on the wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but either way, it was still – compared to what we've seen, Blake, the level he's been playing at in December was a far cry.
Yeah, the worst one was one that wasn't intercepted. That's
correct,
the one
right.
Where you went.
And, you know, occasionally during the streak of mostly good play dating back maybe 6-7 weeks, he's had one or two of those here and there. But quarterbacks have – the standard cannot be perfection, right? Or no one's going to attain that. And so that's what that was. All right, let's see.
The one by – K1 Williams, you know, that's one of those throws where you go, if he makes it, you go, oh, man, thank
right.
you.
How did he get that in there?
Wow, what a throw. And then if it gets intercepted, you're like, God. I wish you just kind of waited.
All right, Jeff, another on the text line. Is the label of great starting to fall off this defense? We give up numerous big plays to Russell Wilson to let them back in the game. Now 38 hung by a 4-10 team. Maybe we bought into the hype too soon. What say you?
Well, I mean, they're definitely, over the last couple weeks, have had some moments to where you go, okay, you know, is this good enough for this defense of what the standard has been kind of set for them? But, you know, the Russell Wilson game, going back to that Seattle game, you know, the breakdowns, that's concerning, you know, because they were just breakdowns. Over the last couple weeks, though, I'm trying to think back of some of the moments. I mean, the Texans game, they were dominant against, obviously, a newly starting quarterback. I mean, up and down. I don't think it's a trend that this defense is on its way down. And I don't think that, you know, the hype, that they're overly hyped. I think this defense is unbelievable. You know, I mean,
but that's why I think people are scratching their heads. Like, it is unbelievable. You go position by position. There are really not many weaknesses at all here yet. If that's the case, how does this happen?
Then? Well, and I go back to saying that, you know, they kept them off balance and, you know, going back to that chess match, you know, and that Robert Saleh knows the defense in and out. He knows what stresses the defense. But at the same token, Todd Walsh knows what stresses the 49ers defense. And that's why I said that I thought the difference in this game was Kyle Shanahan and the game that he called and the execution by Jimmy Garoppolo.
All right. Part of that was getting the ball to Kyle Juszczyk, getting the ball to George Kittle.
Play action.
Okay.
Crushed them.
But not only play action, Jeff, but all right, it's one thing. Yeah, you can take away our outside receivers, right? Or on
most, they didn't do a very good job of that.
But in general, if you were going to pick a weakness on the Jags, it wouldn't be, you know, you wouldn't say, let's throw at Boye and Ramsey. That's going to be where we make our hay. How big of a concern is it? And are they isolating guys on Posluszny because he's not the fastest of the linebackers? What is it that they're doing? We saw this with Austin Ekeler in the Chargers game. We've seen it with you know, backs and tight ends at various times hurting this defense this year because so much focus is on those outside guys taking away the wide receivers. Is this maybe the biggest Achilles heel that the defense has going into
the postseason? I think it's the Achilles heel with any defense, you know, is play action. And, you know, to go back in the early part of that game, they started out playing a lot of man. You saw Jalen following Marquise Goodwin. And you didn't see Jalen really come out and have a strong start.
Not
at all,
right.
You know, so, and I don't know if the whole, you know, plan going into that game was to come in and say we're going to play man and we're going to stick with it. Or if kind of the lack of success early on with man changed the outlook or changed how they played, because then they ended up going to more zone.
And they were much more effective. But I mean, Goodwin was basically a non-factor.
Yeah,
they still had
some man mixed in. And, for example, the Juszczyk. You're talking about a play-action fullback lead, Juszczyk coming downhill, Posluszny, okay, he's the linebacker. He's got to take on that gap. And all of a sudden, Juszczyk runs right by him. That's probably one of the most challenging coverages for a linebacker is when you've got a lead play action coming at you, you've got to meet it in the hole, and then the fullback at the last second veers off, and he's streaking down the field.
What's the best way to counter that? Or
zone. I mean, to just not have a man coverage in that situation would be perfect, because then the guys that are playing a deep third, because that's where Juszczyk ended up running to, you've got a cornerback sitting right there in that deep third. But it was clearly a play that was designed for man. And it was clearly a play that was designed to take advantage of a linebacker that's his eyes is in the backfield and he's playing run, and he has to make a decision, turn and run, or to play the run. So that's a challenging play for a linebacker.
Now here's another one. I'm pretty sure I know what the answer to this is, but I will ask it anyway because it was submitted. Is it possible the Jaguars went vanilla on offense and defense due to the insignificance of the game, hiding what they have in store for the playoffs?
No.
Didn't think so.
No.
I mean, not based on the reaction
of Doug Marone.
It wasn't
insignificant.
Correct. At the time, it was not.
It became insignificant because they lost. They no longer are in line to get the bye. They weren't playing for the division, but if they won the game, then we'd be going into Week 17 with a chance for the Jaguars to still
to
get,
still
the
get
one
a bye.
Seed
still
right.
get a
bye. Potentially in the
true,
AFC.
True.
Instead, they're locked into the three.
Right. Yeah, let me go back, too, because you know the one play we talked about was the Juszczyk play. You know, there was also some of the bootleg plays where you had guys that were in the middle of the field. Because there was one play I remember in particular. It was a bootleg action. And I think it was the tight end that came out, and I think it was Tashaun Gibson who kind of was caught with his eyes into the backfield and was chasing. All of a sudden, there goes the tight end right by him, and he's like, oh, you know. And here's the thing. Carlos Hyde and the 49ers offense, you know, did you ever have the impression that their running game was really dominant?
No. That's why I'm so surprised that play action was so effective.
And that's the thing. A lot of times, you know, because we've heard this team talk about the importance of play action for a couple of years now, and that sometimes it's not that it's effective, but at least it makes the team respect your running game. And I thought the 49ers did a really good job of making the Jaguars respect their running game and then also take advantage of that respect to accomplish things in the passing game.
Yeah, Carlos had a couple of decent runs.
Yeah, but it wasn't like you were
not at all. And Breida's numbers got padded by that last
late
touchdown as well, you know. But they had a more effective running game than the Jags did, but that didn't mean it was a great running game during the contest. All right, we got to take a timeout here. We'll come back to State and Football and the drive around the NFL coming your way. More questions for Jeff Logman on a Check the Tape Tuesday as well. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, along with Jeff Logman here live at EverBank on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented this week by Foundation Professionals of Florida. We got a lot that went down on December 26th over the years. We go back to 1943. The Chicago Bears won the NFL championship. It was the third time in four seasons that the Bears and the Redskins had met for the championship. Each had won one of the previous matchups, and this one, the rubber match, went to the Bears 41-21. Sid Luckman was the quarterback for the Bears that season. Had a quarterback rating of over 107. The rest of the league averaged a quarterback rating of 41. 41!
Wow.
He alone raised it to nearly 50 just with the inclusion of his numbers. How about this? In back-to-back seasons on December 26, 1954 and 1955, the Cleveland Browns won NFL championships on that date. In 54, knocking off Detroit 56-10, and then coming back the next year and defeating the L.A. Rams 38-14. Likewise, the Bills won consecutive AFL championships on this date in 64 and 65. In fact, beating the same team, the San Diego Chargers, each year in 64 by a 20-7 score. And in 65, they shut them out 23-0. Chuck Knoll retired as head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers on this date in 1991 after 23 years of service. And Peyton Manning, if you go back to 2004, threw two touchdown passes at the time, giving him an NFL single-season record of 49 scoring tosses as the Colts beat the Chargers 34-31. Manning finished the year with those 49, also set the single-season passer rating record at the time with 121.1. Brady broke the touchdown record in 2007 with 50, and then Manning would recapture it a few years later with 55. Famous birthdays for this date, Mr. Inside and Mr. Outside. Mr. Inside of the Army was Doc Blanchard. Mr. Outside was Glenn Davis. Glenn Davis was born on this date in 1924, lived to be 80 years old, passing away in 2005. He was the 1946 Heisman winner at Army. In 1945, the year before that, he set a mark that still stands, I believe, to this day, 11.5 yards per carry as part of a career which he averaged 8.3 yards per carry, known as Mr. Outside. He then served in the military prior to the Korean War, but post-World War II, he did serve in Korea prior to the war breaking out, and then joined the L.A. Rams in 1950 after a service commitment, made the Pro Bowl in 1950, his first year in the league, but after a knee injury, he was out of the league after a couple of years, so only playing those two seasons in the National Football League. Also born in the state, however, we've got a local connection, T-Brack. The best pass rusher in Jaguars history, not single season anymore, but collectively. Tony Bracken's born in this date in 1974. Happy 43rd to Tony. 55 career sacks, still paces the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was a one-time Pro Bowler.
Saw him on Friday.
Did you?
Yeah, we quail hunted a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
He came into town, so it was good to see him.
Just hanging out, getting together with friends? Or
Well, no, he actually had a quail hunt that he had purchased at a charity event and brought his son in, and me and him and his son and a good friend of his went out and quail hunted a little bit on Friday morning.
Not a bad way to go. If you're T-Brack, 43 years old, he loves that outdoors life. What is he, on a ranch in Texas?
He's got a ranch, like 400 head of cattle, got trucking interests. I mean, he's doing really well.
That's who he is. This state in football brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida. Your home is your greatest investment. You need to protect it. With over 35 years of experience, Foundation Professionals of Florida, they're the experts you need for foundation and sinkhole repair. Foundation Professionals will find the solution, work with your insurance company, and provide a lifetime warranty. Financing is available. You can call Foundation Professionals of Florida today at 287-2690. That's 287-2690, or visit foundationprosfl.com. That was this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The NFL has decided that there won't be a Sunday Night Football game for Week 17 because they can't guarantee that any team they put on Sunday Night Football will definitely have something to play for regarding the playoffs. Instead, the entire Week 17 slate will be played on Sunday afternoon, with 9 games being played in the 4:25 window this week, including the Jags traveling to Nashville to take on the Tennessee Titans. L.A. Chargers running back Melvin Gordon suffered an ankle injury late in the Chargers' win on Sunday and is in a walking boot, according to his head coach Anthony Lynn, who said, quote, "Ankles can be kind of tricky. He's another guy that's probably going to come down to the end of the week as to whether or not he'll play against the Oakland Raiders." It's a must-win game for the Chargers on Sunday. If the Chargers win and the Titans lose, then the Chargers would be the sixth seed in the AFC playoffs. Bruce Arians is reportedly going to step down from his position as head coach of the Arizona Cardinals following their season finale on Sunday in Seattle. How will that affect the future of Larry Fitzgerald, who did sign a one-year contract extension earlier this season? But if Arians is gone, there is some speculation that Fitzgerald could decide to step away from the game and retire. And finally, Seattle Seahawks safety Earl Thomas has been in the headlines since his post-game comments to Dallas head coach Jason Garrett, where he asked him to come get him following a Seahawks win in Dallas. Here's what Thomas said about what he had to say to Jason Garrett.
We got a great win. I feel like we played lights out. You know, just emotional. You know, I went to the locker room and talked to Dez, and I saw Coach Garrett. And, you know, I've always been a Cowboys fan growing up. But the biggest thing that, you know, when I say come get me is, I mean, I don't literally mean, like, come get me now. You know, I'm still in the prime of my career. I still want to be here. But when Seattle kicked me to the curb, please, the Cowboys, come get me here. You know, that's the only place I would rather be, you know, if I get kicked to the curb. So that's what I meant by it. And, you know, people take life too serious. That's just who I am.
Taking life too serious.
Yeah, because they only pay you millions of dollars to take
Earl
it.
Thomas
is
trash.
Is he?
I mean, for doing that?
Oh, for doing that. All right. Yeah. I didn't know if you had, like, some previous beef with Earl Thomas. Could you imagine? Imagine if this were, and you could say, well, Dallas is not in their division. Imagine if some player on the Jags ran up to Mike Mularkey and said, hey, coach, when I'm done, when I'm over the hill, please come take me to Nashville and save me.
Jalen Ramsey, because he grew up in that area?
There you go, right? I mean, because Earl Thomas, that's it. Earl Thomas, a multi-time Pro Bowler. That's a good equivalent, Tone.
Right, you got to take out the part, hey, when I get to be old or when I get to be washed up, because you know what? He didn't say later. I mean, he kind of said that after the fact.
Right. I that's what I meant. You know. Right. When they're done with me, you know.
That's a trashy comment.
Because everybody wants a player when he's done and over the hill. Let's come take. Yeah, I didn't love that at all.
That's not cool.
No.
You know, if you're a Seahawks fan, you should have a real problem with that.
Yeah, and this, you know, I get it. The players think that the fans take a lot of things way too seriously. Like, you know, players, I know a lot of fans, and it's different, I think, when you're winning. But over the last few years we've done the show, Tony, how many times have people complained about handshakes?
Right?
And really, all the last 10 years of doing shows together, right? Why are you out there just hugging it out like your buddy? There's supposed to be this element of we hate you kind of thing, because the fans feel that way. And I get it that you could take it too far. This is not, in my opinion, the fans is taking it too far.
No, that's just not right.
All right, let's get back to a few questions here for you, Logs. Did they talk about Shanahan calling a great game, having a great scheme? Do they adjust? Did the Jags make any adjustments that you thought were, other than moving away from man initially, that seemed to help out with some of the outside guys, but could there have been more adjustments made on the defensive side of the football in this game that you think might have helped?
No, I don't think so. I think that you know, the one thing about the Jaguars scheme and the Chargers scheme and the 49ers scheme is that it's not intricate. You know, they don't do a ton of things. What they do more than anything else is they simplify things and so that they can play fast, and then they teach the opponent schemes and the route concept so that the scheme literally is like glue on what the opponent's trying to do. So from a schematic standpoint, could they have done anything differently? I thought they made some adjustments early on and got away from man to play zone just because of all the bootlegs and play action that they had. But they still tried to mix in some man, and they still got exposed by it. So no, I don't think there was anything they could have done better to change the game plan. The execution just needed to be better.
Yeah, the second half was weird. I mean, it's a bunch of short fields for San Francisco. Generally, they had the one long sustained drive, but that they gave them 30 yards with the personal fouls on Miles Jack and Unique Ngakoue on that drive, too. It was just a weird half
didn't
of football defensively. Right. And we've seen this defense be put in bad positions. Even last season, we saw them get put in bad position over and over and over and find some way to get off the field. Sunday, they just didn't against the 49. They just couldn't get off the field.
Yeah, what you're talking about, like field position, you know, just looking at the second half, I've got my notes here from the game. I mean, the first drive, you started at the minus 25, and you got the 49ers in. Guess what? Third and long. What happened? Ngakoue gets a sack.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next one, 49ers are at the plus 26 after an interception. Their next possession, they're at a minus at the minus 14, but then you had the taunting by Miles Jack, the personal foul by Ngakoue, and they're able to convert that into points. The next drive, they're at the plus 18 because of an interception that the 49ers were able to get. And then the next one, they're at the minus 40 because the Jaguars didn't do anything offensively and didn't get off a very good punt. You know, so they didn't help themselves out from that standpoint.
All right, let's go to the phones here. Mike and Fernandina next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are we doing today?
Doing well. What's up?
Hey, so, yeah, Jeff, just wanted to dig in a little bit deeper. They ran Carlos Hyde just enough to be effective to sell play action. And their bootlegs were just, you know, really wide arcing bootlegs that bought Garoppolo a lot of time to throw the ball. Most of them were to the right for a right-handed quarterback. Looks like they cleared out, you know, that deep zone so that he had nobody in front of him. We were crashing in pretty hard. If you remember the Dante Fowler play that where he kind of clotheslined the guy trying to get around the end a little bit. But
yeah, that wasn't kind of a clothesline. That was like a full-blown clothesline on Marquise Goodwin.
They're coming in at a hard 45-degree angle, and they. I thought the 49ers, it's like they really studied tape because they'd mix in some straight dropbacks just enough to make them respect that, but then here comes that wide arcing to the right bootleg with 5 seconds to throw the ball, and they clear out the deep zone. And so I guess my question is, it's somewhat similar to minus the bootleg part of it, but what the Chargers do, what can future teams that look at the effectiveness of what 49ers do, can we expect, would you expect other teams to pick up on that and take advantage of our aggressiveness with some similar schemes going forward?
Well, I think everybody would like to be able to have, you know, what the 49ers did against this Jaguars defense. The biggest thing I thought was the early down success. You know, and that you gave, you know, the opponent an opportunity to stay balanced to whether they could run the ball or throw the ball, you know, and a lot of it's got to go to Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, where, you know, he's talking, or you're talking about how, you know, the bootlegs and that, you know, he was dropping back in the pocket and that he had time. Jimmy Garoppolo did, I think, a phenomenal job of really mixing it up, staying in the pocket, getting rid of the ball in a hurry when he needed to, escaping the pocket and buying extra time when it was there, getting outside the pocket, and then making quick decisions outside the pocket on the bootlegs. I can't say this enough. I mean, and I said this going into the game. Jimmy Garoppolo is playing at a high level. And any team, I guarantee that every team in the league right now that doesn't have Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson is going, why didn't we get him?
Does that include the Jags?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what team wouldn't want to have you know, what Jimmy Garoppolo's given the 49ers right now.
But at the same time, I mean, we brought up, you know, kind of midseason, your feelings, I thought, were it's tough to bring in a quarterback midseason.
It is.
Right?
I mean, it is. It's
in
hard.
Hindsight, that's probably
it's
a
hard,
mistake,
but,
right?
You know, who would have thought that, you know, you could have gotten a, you know, guy like Jimmy Garoppolo and he's playing at the level that he's playing at? You know, I give the 49ers credit because when they got him, you know, they didn't just put him right out there. I mean, they gave him 3 weeks on the bench
right.
to learn the system. And then when they came out and they played him in the first game against the Chicago Bears, it was a very limited game plan. They didn't open up the playbook. And then the next week, you could tell they opened it up a little bit more. And then the week after that, they opened it up a little bit more. And then against the Jaguars, they had a full book. They had a full playbook open to him.
Just to dovetail with the caller, Mike, there, talking about the scheme, this is a quote from Telvin Smith after the game on Garoppolo's big day. Scheme beat us. Obviously, their coordinator was in Atlanta, so we know they know our scheme. That's what you saw today. Scheme beat us. That was the words of Telvin Smith. We've got to take a quick timeout and come back on the other side, 641-1010. If you'd like to get in and have a question or comment on the Jaguars, we'll welcome that. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Logman here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
We got to get ready. We're 2-1 in this quarter, the fourth quarter of the season, and you know we got to get ourselves back, and you know, it's the one thing this team has done. They've always come back strong, you know, so I expect the same thing, and I told them it would be heightened awareness, and we'll get ready for, we'll look at this game, correct the mistakes, and we'll go on to Nashville and play a good Tennessee team that beat us early in the year.
Yes, they did. The interesting thing here is, you know, I think a lot of folks are making this kind of a binary thing. I think people are assuming that the Chargers are going to beat the Raiders. I thought the Raiders, you know, gave good effort last night. They didn't play great, but I thought they gave really good effort on a cross-country trip, holiday night when, you know, you're out of it. I thought, you know, they played hard. So Melvin Gordon, as Tony highlighted earlier, has the high ankle sprain. I think it has in the walking boot. So he may not play this week. So it's not a given that the Chargers win that game. Nobody's talking about the Bills, right? Because if the Jags win and Oakland wins, the Bills can slide in. And honestly, Logs, if I'm going to rank them in order that I want to play them in the first week, forgetting how they would get there, what it would mean for how the Jags played in Week 17, I go Buffalo number one, I go Tennessee two, and I'd go the L.A. Chargers being the last one simply because of the pass rush
yes.
that they bring in Phillip Rivers. Right?
Yeah, I mean, Phillip Rivers is the most accomplished quarterback out of any.
Right, and Mariota is not having a great year stretch.
No, like
got more picks than touchdowns.
Six touchdowns over the last X number of games
right.
or whatever it is.
So, I mean, ideally, I think the Buffalo Bills would be the team I'd like to see the Jaguars play. Still, you know, more things need to happen for that than any other scenario.
But. Yeah, a lot of things need to happen, but the thing that needs to happen first is the Jaguars need to win.
In that for that to happen, correct, to have a chance to play the Buffalo Bills. Question for Logs from Ian on the text line. Why are the Jaguar offensive screenplays so ineffective, or why were they maybe this week?
Well, the hands of DeForest Buckner interrupted
one. He's a big boy. He's 6'7".
Yeah, he's a heck of a football player. Really good football player. Really liked him when he was at Oregon. Big
you
man,
made the
strong.
Right. I think it was you who made the comparison to Calais. He,
yeah.
That is the perfect. He really is the closest thing to Calais Campbell
in the league.
In terms of the sheer size he brings and the versatility to play 3-4 and 4-3 end.
Yeah, he's a really good football player. You know, in the screen game, I mean, for the most part this year has been pretty good, I think. And that one there, I thought had a chance to be a big play, but DeForest Buckner got a hand on it and interrupted it. You know, the other thing too is, you know, to have a really good screen game, typically you need a defense that can be really good at rushing the passer at times, you know, that's got some really fast edge guys, and they're worried about getting up the field. And have the Jaguars faced a really, you know, great pass-rushing team lately? No.
Here's one for you. Somebody starts with a premise. Given the fact, which I don't think you're going to agree with the given. But
okay, what's the given fact?
Given the fact that Blake can't throw a proper out route.
That is not a fact.
Okay. So, right. I mean, is he inconsistent at times? Look, he's inconsistent at times, period, right?
Given this Tector's assumption that Blake can't throw a proper out.
After we're given this proclaimed fact.
Given this strong assumption that Blake can't throw a proper out route, over the middle, deep, and back shoulder are his only throws. that he's, I guess, capable of making or good at.
Okay.
Again, maybe another thing that you would have an issue with.
Okay.
Why wouldn't defenses just clutter the middle of the field and take the over-the-middle throw away? Well, you just said he could throw the back shoulder as well, so I guess that would lead susceptible to that.
Yeah, I don't know if that question deserves an answer, but I will say this.
Well, if you'd see the nickname that this guy has earned on the text line, it would all fit in.
Okay.
So.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, he was, prior to the 49ers game, he was the hottest quarterback at the last three games in the National Football League, to where he was.
You're telling me he didn't do it all on back shoulders?
Hey,
and
I don't
and
think it was all on back shoulder, deep balls, and in the middle stuff. Yeah, I thought that there was some stuff that was on the outside, and there were some out routes and everything else.
Yeah, and I mean, he throws, honestly, and he's done this really, Jeff, since the early days, the earliest days he was here, that pass we call it the bucket throw, you know, that where you
it's always
just,
been his best pass.
It really has, right?
He didn't have it, though, last year. You know, I don't know where it went. Well, we don't know where all of it went last year. But that drop in the bucket throw, in fact, that one that he made in the game, I said it was a drop in the lunch pail because it was such a small window
he
was able to get it in there.
Not the first one, by the way, that he Keelan Cole. Remember that one? Who was that one against that you had a defender on his back? He had another one coming to crush him in the front, and he dropped it right between the two of them on the same sideline, and Cole was able to catch it and get down and protect himself.
Yeah, and I can't remember exactly.
You know the one I'm talking
about,
though. I can't remember the opponent either.
We made the comment, and again, we were like holding our breath. And
like he's going to have his head taken
off.
What
a small window that he was able to throw that in.
Yeah. All right, so we'll throw out some of that stuff. Let's see. Biggest concern is our lack of a dominant running game. We've talked about that a little bit. Off of TV film, counted 125 passing yards given up in the Paul Posluszny area. Look, good teams are going to scheme up your. He's certainly not the best guy in coverage that the Jags have, but, you know, Paul has his strengths as well.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Good teams are going to scheme up what they feel is to their advantage, right? If we can match
you
up.
Here's the thing, you know, because you know what? When all of a sudden the Jaguars give up some stuff that's underneath, everybody starts blaming Paul. You know, it's like cool to do that or something. You know, because, you know, when you watch the film, you know, the Juszczyk one, that was man and that was Paul, and that's an extremely hard play, and I'm pretty sure that was man. A hard play for any linebacker, whether it been Telvin Smith or Miles Jack or Paul Posluszny, because you have to honor the run. But you have to play the pass, too. It's a hard play. But there was a lot of play, and I will say this. Paul Posluszny probably played better than Telvin Smith, and probably played better than Miles Jack. They weren't very good, okay, those two linebackers.
Right.
Not at the level that we're used to seeing. And a lot of that stuff that was caught in the middle, you know, fact check. Okay, let's do a fact check.
Okay.
A real fact check.
Yes.
Who's the starting two linebackers in the Jaguars' nickel defense?
Telvin and Miles.
Okay. Now, Posluszny have anything to do with that?
No.
Fact. That is a fact. So we can assume that is fact, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's a fact.
He's channeling me right now. There
was a lot of completions in the middle of the field in zone, soft zone coverages. And last time I checked, the fact is that those two guys are the linebackers in there. It was not a good game by them. It was not a very good game by the Jaguars' defense as a whole.
Yeah, it felt like Telvin was a half step away from a lot of plays on Sunday. And I don't know if that was, you know, he had missed a couple weeks and getting back into the flow of it a little bit. I don't know.
I will say that, you know, last week was his first game back from the concussion.
Houston, yeah.
And I remember watching that film, you know, last week, and I went, okay, first game back, you know, okay, not great, but okay. Okay, for the first game back. And then after watching this game, I went, second game back, not great, probably even worse than the week before.
Mm.
You know, so, and I'm not saying it was terrible.
Right.
I'm just saying that's not the standard that you know, he has
that
set.
That he's capable of,
which is, you know, arguably one of the best, you know, weak side backers in the National Football League. He hasn't played to that level.
Here's a question from Martin on our Facebook page here. Do you think, and I'll paraphrase it a little bit, but he said, do you think the Jags need this loss to reboot since they're so young? They seem to be maybe thinking too highly of themselves. I'm not saying they need the loss, but could you find a benefit in the loss in the fact that, hey, guys, maybe you are, you know what, you think you just can't show up and roll into anywhere in this league. I don't know that this happened to any degree, but the coaches would have a better handle on that. And could it be maybe the quote unquote proverbial wake up call?
Well, if there is such a thing, which, you know, let's assume there's a wake up
call.
Okay.
Fact.
Yeah.
Fact's not an evidence.
Let's assume. Okay.
All
right. This isn't a fact.
Assumption.
Okay. Let's assume that this is a fact. Okay, that you know, you have wake up calls. Wouldn't it be better to have it now than in the playoffs? Okay, because it's too late to respond. You know, so I mean, from that aspect, you know, you hope that this helps, because you know, a lot of times you can learn great things in winning, and you can learn great things in losing, and sometimes it's easier to learn in losing as opposed to winning because it's reinforced because you lost. You know, so you hope that it does help more than it hurt.
All right. Are the Jags stronger on the offensive line with Linder at guard?
Gosh.
Back to this
question again.
Combination.
Look, the Jaguars, you know, offensive line is playing good. Last week, I mean, was a dominant performance by the interior three.
Really had great two back-to-back games.
Yes. The interior of the pocket and protection was really good. I thought the run blocking was really good. You know, I mean, look, right now, Patrick Omame, and I will say this about Patrick Omame, I think he's put together his three best game stretch yet in his Jaguars career. I thought he played really well yesterday, or 2 days ago. I'm used to this being like the day after.
Gotcha.
The game.
Sure.
2 days ago. I thought best three game stretch that he's had. I thought that AJ struggled a little bit, particularly against DeForest Buckner. But there's a lot of guys that struggle against DeForest Buckner, and I thought Linder was really good. So.
All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a time out here. When we come back, we'll get a few more questions for you, but also want to get your thoughts on what can the Jags do this time against Tennessee to change the outcome that they got in week two. Let's presume that they're going to go into this game. Look, I think they're going to give full effort to win no matter who they put on the field. But let's presume that most of the frontline guys are going to go that are not dealing with injuries. What do you think is the most effective way to walk away with a W and send yourself into the postseason with a little bit of momentum? He is Jeff Loggeman, along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today. We are live at Everbank Field on a Check the Tape Tuesday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, final few minutes here with Jeff Loggeman on a Check the Tape Tuesday, our final one for the calendar year 2017, but not for the football season of 2017. Logs, I hope, as was the case last year, you plan on sticking around through the NFL playoffs.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll break it down. Hopefully that means a long run for the Jaguars, right?
I hope so.
You never know. All right, we've got at least playoff football for the first time for Check the Tape Tuesday. We'll have at least one playoff game to preview and review, and hopefully many more after that. This week, we'll get to the Titans coming up. Want to get one or two more questions in that were submitted for you this morning. This one for Brian at Far Nor Cali said, when Cam Robinson went out, would the Jags have been better off having Omame at left tackle and playing Shatley at guard instead of playing Wells at tackle? Wells always scares me when he comes in.
I thought Wells, he did a good job.
Yeah,
I thought he did
a
really good job in that game. And I don't want to say that they didn't miss a beat without Cam Robinson, because Cam Robinson, I think, gives them a little bit more in the run game because he can move people a little bit more. But having Cam Robinson not in the lineup and Wellesley in the lineup was not the reason for any inadequacies that they had on offense.
Overall, I mean, Blake was sacked one time in the game. I mean, with pass protection, would you say generally good?
Pass protection was good.
So there you go.
The only guy that was much of an impact in that game, in fact, Cam Robinson gave up a pass rush to Cassius Marsh, who is, you know, he's not a great pass rusher, gave up something to him that really shouldn't have been given up. But the only one that was able to really generate anything was DeForest Buckner. He was kind of the consistent guy throughout the game. Solomon Thomas, you know, and I kind of said this when he was coming out, you know, I don't know what position he would play in the National Football League. And I think he ended up getting a sack. Was he the one that got a sack in a ball game? Solomon Thomas?
I think he reached between the legs. Oh, that's right. He was
of Wellesley.
And Wells had him flat on his stomach.
Yeah, Wellesley knocked his hands down, buried him down to the ground. The old Tuncho couldn't move.
That was a crazy sack.
He reached
shot the gap and tripped Blake up.
He actually reached between the legs
right.
of Wellesley from
that's
the ground.
That's what I'm saying. Shot that gap between his feet. Because Blake looked like he had some room to run. He was stepping up in the pocket, looking like he was about ready to tuck it and go.
Yeah, that was actually a good pass block by Wellesley.
You know, right.
You know, what the pass block is, a lot of people wondering what you say, Tunchyokin. Tunchyokin was very good right tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers for a long time. And he played right tackle at about 260 pounds, which is very light, even by back then NFL standards. And because he was light and wasn't able to absorb a lot of the power rushes, what Tunch would do is when a guy would extend his arms and he's getting bull rushed, he would take his hands and knock the hands down of the defensive lineman, which would make the momentum of the defensive lineman, where his head's starting now to go down to the ground, and bury him into the ground. And Tunch actually goes around the National Football League. He is a paid
consultant
that goes to these teams and teaches some of the techniques that he created in his playing days. And he has been here to teach these offensive linemen in the past. And Wellesley on Solomon Thomas. Solomon Thomas is trying to power rush him. Wellesley knocks the hands down, buries him down to the turf. You got to do it quick. You don't want to do it late to where you end up burying him down on the ground in the legs of the quarterback.
Right.
And he does it early. He's down on the ground. And there goes Blake Bortles to kind of take off. And he reaches between the legs of Josh Wells and grabs enough of Blake's ankle to end up getting
I'm sure it's happened before. I can't recall it. Seeing it anyway. It was
good play by Solomon Thomas.
That was a good play.
But when he was coming out, he was a guy that I was like, you know, he is an excellent collegiate football player. But where is he going to play in the league? Because he didn't have enough really quickness to play end, and he doesn't really have enough size to be a true three-technique defensive tackle. So that's why I wasn't, you know, he was, what, second overall pick in the draft. And I was going, you know, I really like him. But I don't think he's second overall pick because I don't know what
position
he's going to play. Because
they flipped with oh, no, that's right. I'm going back a couple. I'm thinking of when did he come out? 2 years ago?
This spring.
Oh, that was third, right? Because yeah. San Francisco flopped with Chicago so they could get Trubisky.
Yeah,
right?
You might be right.
I think that's the case. I think the Bears moved up to get Trubisky one spot.
I don't remember
and
exactly.
San Fran. It doesn't matter.
He was second overall.
Was he second overall?
Yeah, he was second overall. Because first overall was Trubisky.
No, Trubisky went two.
Yeah, Trubisky went two.
Sure?
Right.
Yeah, Garrett went one.
Okay, that's right. Miles Garrett was first, and then it was Solomon Thomas.
Top three draft pick.
And, yeah, then it was Trubisky. Trubisky was three.
Was he three?
Garrett, Trubisky, Solomon Thomas, Fournette.
Yeah. There you go. Trubisky second. Because they did. They gave up a bunch to move up to one spot, and everyone was like, whoa, what? And it was that the fact that it was Trubisky that they moved for and not Deshaun Watson or Pat Mahomes that everyone was like, whoa.
Yeah, wow.
Anyway, one more before we get to Tennessee. This one from Jamie, a little tongue-in-cheek, I think. Is this the first time in history that the Jags are both AFC South and AFC North champions in the same season?
He's right.
You ought to get a little flag, right? Maybe not as prominently displayed as your own division title, but when you sweep another division, that's a nice
pretty cool
little thing to do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Baltimore.
Got more wins against the AFC North than they got against everyone last year.
Yeah, which
and that's
is impressive.
Pretty crazy, right? All right, Logs, Tennessee coming up this weekend. We can't know for sure how they're going to approach this game, but let's presume that maybe they rest like a Cam Robinson who's dealing with an injury, maybe even a Jalen Ramsey. But in terms of matching up with the Tennessee Titans, who look like they're going to be without DeMarco Murray as well.
I don't think that hurts them at all, by the way.
I think Derrick Henry's a better player at this point in time. The reason that they've liked him in there is pass protection. And they're less predictable with Murray on the field because traditionally when Henry's been in there, they've been more of a heavy run tendency team regardless.
Well, the other thing that kind of by not having him available, I mean, they actually have a lot of two-back packages with Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray on the field at the same time, which can be challenging. So they lose that package a little bit. But, you know, they're not going to change what they do. They are who they are. They're going to run the football.
So how do you get a different result than the first time around? Other than
you got to do a better job stopping the run. You know, the first time that you played them, you just didn't do a very good job at all stopping the run. And along those lines, you know, I think that's one of the things or one of the reasons why that you know, the 49ers were able to have success is because it kind of had the appearance that they were giving up some stuff against the run. And, you know, there's some guys that have to play better against this Tennessee Titans football team. You know, over the last couple of weeks, you know, because when Marcell Dareus was acquired, you saw the bump in play. When I say the bump in play, the ranking started to go up against the run because there was improved play against the run by, you know, three guys in particular, and that was Marcell Dareus himself. And then his presence, I think Avery Jones kicked him up a little bit and made him play better, realizing that, you know, look, I got to play better if I'm going to keep my play time. And then I think it actually improved the play of Malik Jackson, although I think a lot of it was Malik getting healthier to where his level of play actually increased. Over the last couple of weeks, I think that Marcell Dareus has just been average, you know, and you might even say a little bit below average, you know. And if there was a game that Marcell Dareus needs to play and play well, and Avery Jones needs to play and play well, this is the game. I mean, this is the game because everything starts up front for the Tennessee Titans. And in order to get them to their weakness, which is Marcus Mariota right now, you got to get them into third and long situations.
Here's a quote via Paul Kaharsky from Jarrell Casey. I think Tony obviously has seen this based on the harump there. We're going to sweep the division other than losing to Houston. This is Jarrell Casey talking, but we can't win the division. That's the part that sucks. They, meaning the Jags, won't even technically beat us and win the division. It is what it is. They're supposed to be the king of the South, and we're ready to see that. So if you wanted a little bulletin board material, consider it provided by Jarrell
Casey.
But you
don't need it in a division game.
No, I don't Tennessee think you do either, but I do think this team –
it adds to it.
This team enjoys – the bulletin board material.
No, I think it does. Yeah.
You know, don't you think, Tony? Yeah. We've seen it on several occasions be brought up in the post game comments after they've handled a team that's run their mouth a little bit.
No doubt. And I think the other thing, you know, we've seen this team respond so well after losses. You know, all season long, anytime they've lost, they come back the next week and not only won, but they win emphatically.
Right.
After a loss. I do wonder if, with nothing really to play for this weekend, what it looks like for this football, like, is it a little bit more unfocused than it has been earlier in the year coming off
for the Jags?
For the Jags,
yeah. I don't know. I would think whoever's out there is going to have an incredible amount of focus in this football game, right? I mean,
heck yeah.
You know, it's going to be one of those weeks. I think it's impressed upon them the importance of playing to win and playing, you know.
It's a division game. And I think, look, this game has so much more importance than just, okay, it's the last game of the year and you want to get momentum in the playoffs. It's a division game against a division nemesis, and also they beat you before. So if you don't want to win and you don't want to play, you don't need any more reason.
Oh, I'm with you. I've never been one that bulletin board material should be a big factor in professional football, but it does seem to juice this team.
It really does. And by the way, Jarrell Casey, congrats on sweeping the Colts. Nice job there. The Jags managed to sweep the Colts and Texans,
yes,
in case you haven't been paying attention.
Of course, the Jags didn't get the full dose of Deshaun Watson either, which they got.
That didn't
hurt. They reaped the whirlwind on that one. What did they hang 59 on him with Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
We'll worry about him next year, as right now we check in with the Midday Chalk.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Get a free cup of queso when you download the Moe's Rockin' Reward app. Order ahead, earn discounts, and get rewarded for every purchase.
All right, we got Joe Coward in for the Midday Chalk. Happy Boxing Day to you, Joe Coward.
Yeah, apparently Boxing Day is a big deal. You know, the Canadians, the English, all of that, the Queen.
Do you know what Boxing Day is?
Yeah, I heard it, and it still doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but you put all of your gifts in a box and you give it to your servants.
I thought it was something like things that, you know, maybe you got that instead of re-gifting it, or just, you know, things that you didn't really want, you gave it to people that were less fortunate, less well off.
Well, maybe because they did say it was given to servants, so if they're bossing them around, so maybe
that may have been the origin of it. Yeah. I don't know if every Canadian is running around with a pack of servants, because it seems to be a pretty big day up there. And for years, I was too lazy to look it up, and I just thought they were really into pugilism, but I was wrong. So, Joe, the Jags were not as into this game this weekend as we thought they would be. It seemed giving up 44 points, certainly one touchdown on the pick six. But what surprised you more, Blake Bortles having a 3-interception game with one taken back, or the defense not really stopping much of the 49er offense?
Yeah,
all day?
The defense for sure. Blake has done it before. We haven't seen it in a while. I was hoping that, you know, he had turned a major corner, but yes, he had a very poor game. There were a lot of other things that you could point to. Here's the thing: 28 points, guys. off of bad play. 21 from the offense due to turnovers and that one drive that led to another touchdown for Jimmy Garoppolo and company was solely based on three flags and an absolute lack of discipline. So, yeah, I know you can't take those points away, and this is just another one in a long line of, you know, you get voted to the Pro Bowl, you got four guys on the Pro Bowl, you lock up a playoff spot, you're kicking it out west, it's Christmas. I can see a number of factors maybe contributing to this.
All right, what do you guys have coming up over the next 3 hours?
Definitely recount the Jags, take a look at all these playoff scenarios, what can happen, who are you going to play against the Tennessee Titans, and, you know, is this team leaking oil late? So we'll get into all of that and, of course, get into the bowl games as well.
All right, Joe Cowart's servants find out today which presents he did not want for Christmas. Joey, have a great show today, brother.
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, we'll see you. Joe Cowart, Rick Ballew, and T-Wig coming up on the midday chalk here. Logs, final thoughts as we head into the week. You know, obviously, you know, you gave your thoughts on how they can do better against the Titans this time. Officially for you, if you are Doug Marrone, how are you approaching this football game in terms of playing time and all that?
Like this is a game that you need to win to get in the playoffs and to gain momentum going into the playoffs, to get confidence back, to try to get back to being hot. I mean, this team has been hot, and to be hot going into the playoffs, I think, is the most important thing you can do, you know, especially when you don't have a dominant quarterback. I think that's the one difference, I think, that why you play it differently. Like, if you had you know, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, you know, and he's proven that he can win in the playoffs and has been there, done that, and your team's been there, done that, I think then you might treat this game a little differently. But because this team has never been in the playoffs, that this team is not. I mean, what, Mercedes is the only one back in 07. You need to play this game like it has a lot of meaning.
Right, at least in a Jaguar uniform. You got a few guys that have got some playoff experience.
Brent Martineau just tweeted something out that's blowing my mind right now. Apparently, Blake Bortles has been nominated for the FedEx Air Player of the Week award. What?
That is simply, they're looking at raw numbers. You threw for 382 with a couple of touchdowns.
With Jared Goff and Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston?
Yeah.
And a loss. He had a good game, but it was a loss.
Yeah, boy, it didn't end well for him. Did you see how it ended?
No, I didn't.
On the sideline? I mean, petulant baby meltdown, shoved the dude in a suit. Like, he was, it was a, you want to talk about bad sideline looks? That was bad one for Jameis Winston this week. Yeah, so anyway, that's.
Vote if you want.
Go ahead. You know what? show them what those awards are really worth and go stuff the ballot box.
Yeah, if I was a Jags fan, I'd be voting for Jared Goff.
Hey,
you're
Logs,
division champions because of that effort from Jared Goff.
That's a good point. You know what? Jared Goff, what did he do? I guess he threw a screen pass well to Todd Gurley, who went 80 yards with it.
Let's see. Who had Todd Gurley in fantasy?
Thank you. For me, that would be me. I thought I blew it by not taking him last week. He came through again and won a lot. He's fantasy MVP, by the way. There's no question. I mean, he's the high-scoring player in a lot of leagues, high-scoring running back for sure, and to come through with two 40-plus point efforts in the fantasy playoffs, he's a unanimous fantasy MVP in my book for 2017. Anyway, Logs, great work getting you. I know you had a lot of stuff to get done this morning to be able to spend the full 2 hours with us, so we appreciate your time. Glad you had a nice Christmas, and we'll look forward to catching up with you throughout the week. Where can folks catch you, by the way? Any revised
same
schedule?
Same stuff. Okay. You know, Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. We got Doug Marrone Show Thursday, Jaguars Thursday, Outdoor Show Saturday, and then various Jaguars TV-related programs where we've got a couple little things, with one with Doug Marrone on Jaguars Weekend. And then Jaguars mic'd up, Jags Wired. We have a little piece in there as well, which we do the hidden gem.
All right, well, we'll look forward to all
that. Yeah. But most importantly, looking forward to Sunday in Nashville.
Right on, brother. All right, there he goes, Jeff Loggeman, who will be there broadcasting the game featuring the AFC South champion, Jacksonville Jaguars. At the very least, Tony should be happy about that as Jaguar fans. I mean, they've come a long way. Did it go the way you wanted it to on Sunday? Of course it didn't, but still bigger things ahead for this team this very year. Let's hope that's the case. For Fat Tony, for Jeff Loggeman, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks for tuning in once again to Jaguars today. Coming up next, we got the Midday Chalk, so stick around for those guys. Just minutes away here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go to the